Nerdish,
nerdy,
nerd news.
Hi, and welcome to Nerdish, Nerdy, Nerd News. Come along and ride with us as we explore, discuss, and nerd-splain some of the most interesting topics of today.
Hey, I'm Tim. Hung around with nerds a lot growing up, hoping that it would rub off. I think it kind of did, because I'm kind of nerdish. As always, my co-hosts.
Hey, thanks, Tim. I'm Christian. I've been playing and writing, creating games and Dungeons & Dragons since high school. My idea of a relaxing weekend is playing vids with my buds online. I also used to do complex math troubles with my dad for fun. I am very nerdy. And with us to help us understand the world a little better.
Hi, I'm Jess. I've been programming and using computers since the early 80s. I'm a voracious reader, consistently going through about 500,000 or more words a month. I've got some biochemistry in my background, and I've been using technology for as long as I can remember. I am the nerd.
Hey, Tim. Hey, Jess. How you guys doing today?
Good.
What did you guys get up to this weekend?
I got to spend the weekend in Cypress Hills.
Yeah, I saw that you were playing there.
You're shooting for the stars there, Timmy.
Yeah, playing Rockstar again. Got to play with a gentleman by the name of Alvin Law.
Yeah, he's pretty fantastic.
He's an amazing, amazing human being. Got up and played some drums with us, and we gave him a jacket, and he became an official bromantic.
Nice, nice.
Yeah.
Now you got lots of groupies, I guess, eh?
Well, we're gonna now. We sure didn't before.
What did you do, Christian?
Well, Sunday night I got up to actually looking at the sky because there was a big giant blood moon that was up in the sky, and that was the moon falling behind the Earth as the sun and
it's called an eclipse.
Yes, that thing, an eclipse. Sorry, words were missing.
I'm
my
the
brain.
One that can't remember words.
I know.
What's going on?
You're contagious, I swear. So yeah, I got out. It was like 10 o'clock, between 10 and 11 o'clock, and as the moon moved behind the Earth in its eclipse, it turned bright red and around the edges and kind of blurred out of. It was really cool.
See, I saw blood moon with my boys. We went out for a blood moon, probably. I can't remember, 5-6 years ago now. And I told my boys, the next blood moon you'll see like this will be 75 years from now. So hopefully it'll be you three. But in the in-between, there's been like 10 blood moons. So
there's partial blood moons.
Yeah, they're not full eclipses. They're just partials. So
okay. So now I understand.
So talking about space.
Space and stars and all that stuff. Have you heard of the Hubble telescope, Tim?
A little bit.
Well, so the Hubble was launched back like the late 80s, early 90s, I think.
It's the one that blows bubbles, yeah. Right?
And they actually sent shuttles up to repair it and upgrade it back in the late 90s, I think, as well.
Yeah, it was myopic. It needed glasses.
It got old, so they needed to put glasses on it, kind of like us.
Wow. How do you get that job?
So since Hubble, they've now... It launched a brand new one because you can only upgrade it so much. Just like us, you can only bionically upgrade us to a certain point and then it just becomes futile.
Yeah. So make sure you get out and see the bromantics before Tim has to get that artificial hip implanted.
It's coming fast, folks. It's coming fast.
Yeah. So this is where Jess really loves his new James Webb telescope.
Oh, it is pretty cool. So just a little information. It's a space telescope that was designed for infrared. Hubble is more for visible light. It doesn't go into the infrared. It goes in different frequencies of light, so we can't see the same thing. It's a lot bigger than the Hubble. We'll get into that in a few minutes. And it's got this really special place that it has to sit. It's in a Lagrange point, and it has to stay at almost absolute zero degrees.
So this is not in your backyard.
No. This isn't one you can buy at
can buy at
Future Shop.
There's a lot of engineering that was specifically designed, developed, and researched and discovered just for this telescope.
Yeah. New laws of physics were basically found to allow this to work.
It's primary mirror, and if you haven't seen what it looks like, it looks like a radio. Like a satellite dish on top of a I don't know, a kite?
Yeah.
It's kind of like a kite made of metal.
Okay, I can see that image.
Yeah, yeah. And so the big mirror, the big satellite dish, is what the actual telescope is. And that mirror is what reflects in the light, because infrared is still light. It's just lower that we can't see ourselves. It is 6.5 meters. Now, for all those people out there that don't know what meters are, 21 feet in diameter.
That's a big telescope.
It's a big telescope. just an example, Hubble was only 2.4 or 7.9 feet. So it's three times bigger
than the Hubble. So,
so bigger is better.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So as far as mirrors go, like think of your TV. We're sitting here in the studio with a 19-inch monitor. Now, if you had a 90-inch monitor, how much you could see on that screen, right?
I could see the smirk on Tim's face.
Right? So you know, take this little monitor, 19-inch monitor, and multiply it by three. Mm-hmm. And how much information you can put on that. That is now how much that James Webb can display on its imaging. And
I could actually see what was on the screen.
Without glasses, yes.
Yeah. Just as an example, the telescope, the one that you always see in movies and stuff that's on top of the mountain in Hawaii, it's called the Canada-France-Hawaii Telescope, is only 3.5 meters. So it's a little bigger than Hubble, like or 11.7 feet, but it's still nowhere near what the James Webb is.
So James Webb is king.
It is right now.
Yeah, there is only like one telescope that's considered, well, there's a few telescopes that are bigger, but the Arecibo one that was in Mexico was made out of a crater. It was like a kilometer and across, but it was a radio telescope.
And that one actually is now decommissioned.
Yeah, it fell apart.
That big one you see in like James Bond?
The James Bond one. Yeah, that's the Arecibo one, and it was a huge radio telescope.
So it's measuring radio waves, not infrared, not visual light. It's it's focused on a different...
Totally different technology.
And different wavelengths.
Yeah. So, and it has to be this, so the James Webb, it launched off in, where's my note?
Okay, it's a big question here though, is the James Webb in a James Bond film?
Not yet.
Not yet.
Not quite as cool as the other.
It'll be Moonraker 2.
Okay.
Right on.
Moonraker 2.
Yeah.
Coming to a theater near you. Featuring the James Webb Telescope.
Yeah. They launched in, I can't remember.
So the development of James Webb, I think, began back in 96. And it was originally slated for a 2006 launch. But as per many government-run things, there was cost overruns, delays, major redesigns, and all kinds of things that caused it to delay until December of 2021 when they finally launched.
Its initial cost. Okay, we're going to go into some big numbers here. Okay, so when I say, hey, Tim, we're going to build a telescope, it's going to be fancy. It's going to cost about $500 million.
I'm out.
Okay. I'm out. But we all know cost overruns and, you know, contractors with their $50 hammers and $200 toilet seats and things like that. The James Webb final cost has been estimated at $9.7 billion.
Wow. So don't scratch it.
Yeah, nothing like a 200% increase.
Holy smokes.
But it's still, like I said, the technology that's been put into it, it's useful for multitudes of other things now.
Like what? What can we see? What can we do with this thing?
Okay, so the first thing that we can talk about are the kite part that I was talking about.
Okay.
And that's the sunshade. Because it has to be kept at very cold. Infrared means heat, right?
Right.
So it has to be able to sense heat, but it's sensing heat from stars that are a very far, long way away. And we'll talk about how far that is. But just imagine the farthest distance you possibly can, and it's further.
Like, that's like Saskatoon.
It's unimaginable. It's one of those numbers, Tim, that you're going to go, I don't get it, because it's so big.
Yeah.
Okay. So it has to be kept at very, very, very cold temperatures to be able to see that, which is about -447 Fahrenheit. That's almost absolute zero, the coldest in the universe, or -266 Celsius.
Once you get colder than that, every atom, every proton, stop moving.
So this whole time, I thought I was walking up to this thing and looking through it, and I'm going to see someone walking on Mars.
Yeah.
No.
Not happening.
No, because it is a long ways away from here as well. So they launched it. It's unlike the Hubble, which is sitting in orbit around Earth. This one isn't, is it?
No, well, kind of. It's something called a Lagrange point. A Lagrange point is
It's a ZZ Top song.
Yeah. Lagrange point is like where gravity from the Earth, the Moon, and the Sun and everything balance, right? Like you've taken a broom and you've put it in your hand and it's like you balance the broom straight up in the air in your hand.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's like that, but there's
That's
nothing.
What I thought they were for.
There's nothing holding it up in this case. It's just a spot in those various places where it'll stay. And L2, so if you think of a picture, there's the Sun, then there's the Earth, then there's the Moon, and we're going in a straight line away from the Sun, and then there's L2. It's further out than the Moon's orbit, I believe. So it's quite a way out, but it's just that's one spot where it balances. There's five Lagrange points in the solar system for every planet.
And basically with that, it allows them to use gravity to keep it in place rather than having to have fuel engines turning on all the time to keep, like, think of.
And what is gravity? No, we won't get into that, guys. Sorry.
No, there's a whole movie. Sandra Bullock did it.
Yeah. it's one of the spots. I think this is one of the first spacecraft that we've put in that spot permanently as well. So that was quite the accomplishment. It took something like 6 weeks for it to get there.
So I'm sorry, Tim, your flat Earth theory is out the window because the math they did to do this.
Gosh darn it.
The math they did to do this requires the Earth to be round.
I really want it to jump.
It's 1.5 million kilometers, or 930,000 miles away.
Okay.
So get walking now if you want to.
It's a long walk.
Yeah, it is.
We've been using telescopes just to kind of. Everyone knows we've been using telescopes since the 1600s.
I was going to say this has come so far from just getting a telescope and looking at the Moon in the backyard. Yeah, right?
Like we're only 500 years away from where we first invented the telescope, and now look where we are.
Yeah. Like the first telescopes appeared in Netherlands in the 1600s, and basically they took three pieces of glass that they had and more or less kind of wrapped them in a rudimentary tube. And
I wonder if that would have cost them $9 billion.
In equivalent terms back then, probably.
The first telescope was a 3x telescope. That means that something that you'd look through, it would seem 3x closer or 3x bigger.
Yeah.
So not very powerful.
But like super cool for back in the day.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, and you try and think of like what you'd be looking at. Like you may be looking at the Moon. You'd be looking at the tree across your yard.
Oh, yeah. But you'd be the cool kid on the block for
ships,
sure.
The spy glasses on ships so they could see other ships.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's where a lot of that kind of probably came from was mm-hmm. you, like many.
And it was a huge breakthrough. That was like one of the big breakthroughs of science and development, because within a year, that technology had spread all across Europe.
Yeah, and within like the next 100 years, telescopes had gone from 3x to almost 100x zoom. And they'd grown from to 15 and 20 feet long. So they'd figured out just in that 100 years how to take that telescope and make it a massive increase from,
And then they got even better, and they got to 200 times with a special telescope called a refracting telescope, it's a refracting telescope is the one that uses lenses. Then there's a reflecting telescope, which uses mirrors like the James Webb and the Hubble.
Typical telescopes that we use, what are they like? Most
telescopes that you see now, if they're dealing with light, are reflecting because you can get much more, you can gather more light with a reflecting because you have a huge mirror, which then reflects it down to another mirror, which then reflects it over to what you're looking through.
So even the telescopes that we could buy.
Yeah. Well, you can get both kinds, but the ones that have the higher, like you can
see farther. The ones where you look in the end, like a pair of binoculars, those are refracting, typically,
kind of, yeah. The reflecting ones can do that too.
Oh, okay. See, I've only seen
just inside the telescope is either mirrors or lenses, and the lenses ones are typically smaller.
And these all seem boring now.
Well, do you have a camera?
They do compared to James.
I'm not satisfied.
No, they are.
Do you have a camera, Tim?
Absolutely.
What kind of lenses?
I don't know.
Okay.
Come on.
Christian, you've done photography.
A little, yeah.
Yeah. How much does a really good telephoto lens cost?
Mm, a grand, but like the big monster ones, you're looking at like 10 grand probably.
You pay as much as you want.
Those big ones you see at the football games.
That's basically a telescope.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's for a photography for a really good telescope. You're looking at $10,000 to $15,000 for something that can only doesn't have a great amount of you know, zoom.
30 to 45.
Sure look cool using it, though.
It does.
But,
yeah.
But then you get like the reflecting ones.
That's a statement.
The reflecting ones, my father bought one just like a few years ago, and it's I think he paid like $1,500, and you can look through it and see like the rings on Saturn.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, a lot of the home-based ones now, too, you can get them with software that tracks things, because mm-hmm. that's a lot of the problem when you, say, look at the moon, is that it actually is moving across the sky so fast that it's hard to keep a telescope that's zoomed in on a crater to keep it on that crater.
Oh, yeah.
So a lot of them now, just like James Webb, have these fancy programs and software where it'll auto-track things across the sky. You tell it where you are on Earth, and you go, hey, I want to look at Jupiter tonight, and it goes and points straight at Jupiter.
And then it keeps it in the middle of your view.
Yeah. So on that, James Webb, similar, like I say, like we said, it's similar but different to Hubble, which is, you know, two, 3 decades old. And it really has changed or is currently changing the way we are going to look at the sky.
Yeah. It's cosmology, which is the understanding of the beginning of the universe.
Not cosmetology.
No. That's the understanding of how you put on mascara.
Oh. Well, I got to explain that to the boys differently then.
The James Webb has like 4 key goals. The first one is to search for light from the very first stars and galaxies that were created. The second one is galaxy formation and evolution, to understand how stars were made and how planets are made, and to study planetary systems and origins of life. So how can you do that with a telescope? Well, it's because the James Webb can see so far away. How far away, Tim? How far away? Guess.
1 million light years away. Too far?
It's not far enough.
Not far.
Really? Enough. Yeah. I thought I was really going out there.
Yeah. It's a lot more.
What?
So, I mean, James Webb.
I'm blown away already now. I thought that was a ridiculous number.
It is a ridiculous number, right? The James Webb, it should be able to see about 13 billion light years away.
What?
Yeah. So they're hoping that this will be able to almost look back at the Big Bang, like the formation of the universe, and see.
Now I'm super intrigued. That is over the top. You almost got to give me a couple minutes to even kind of think about that one. 13 billion light years.
Here, why don't I throw numbers at you here, Tim? Because I know you love your numbers.
Well, these numbers are kind of
careful.
Intriguing.
We don't want to get too smoky in here.
Yeah, well, we got fire extinguishers handy. So light travels at 300,000 kilometers per second. Okay?
Like about a billion kilometers an hour.
Just a little number.
Yeah.
That takes from the sun 8 minutes from the sun to get to Earth. I don't know if you've maybe heard that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So 1 light year equals about 8.5 trillion kilometers.
No, it's 9. So for, 9.5.
Sorry, 9.5.
Yeah,
so for that light from our sun to go out 1 year, it will travel 9.5 trillion kilometers from our sun, right? Think of that as your source. James Webb should be able to see about 13 billion light years.
Yeah, it's not even a number that you can comprehend.
Now you're taking 9.5 trillion kilometers and multiplying 9.5 trillion times 13.5 billion to get the distance that sun, that star, that light source is away from you. A billion times a trillion.
Yeah. And that's why it has to be so cold. It has to be so cold because that light that it's getting, that infrared light from way back then, is so very, very small.
And all the things in between it. That distance, like anything moves in front of it, another planet, a star, whatever, is going to basically be like a spotlight.
Yeah, and you guys see the smoke coming from my ears? I'm still just trying to
just
grasp
blown
this,
like, away. I just like the fact that you said a million. I thought that was huge.
Well, it is. Well, because at the speed of light, traveling at what did you, I thought it was 180,000 miles per second.
186,000. Yeah, I think that's what it is. That's the equivalent.
Yeah. So traveling at that speed, 1 million years at 1 million years. That's pretty far away. I thought I did pretty good there,
you
fellas.
You did. You were a long ways away.
13 but you had billion
just,
light
yeah,
years.
You had just taken the first step in your journey of
our galaxy
has opened right up.
It's only 100,000 light years across.
Our galaxy. Our little Milky Way galaxy.
Our Milky Way with however many billion stars in it.
So, like, how far is that? What are we seeing out there then?
And it that is, we're seeing, hopefully, planets and stars and galaxies and solar systems and things like that. Because it takes light travels at one light year.
We got to be able to see some little alien gardener out there for sure.
Like, well, and that's the thing. What some of the things that they're hoping to see too will be, what is it, the transom of a planet in front of the sun?
The transit, yeah.
Transit of a planet.
Which is how we identify.
Which is how we've identified Goldilocks planets. So have you ever heard that before?
I've heard the term.
So the Goldilocks, too cold, not too hot. Yeah.
Just right.
So just like ours, like we have a red, a yellow sun. If you have a planet at a certain distance from that sun, it should be in the Goldilocks zone.
There should be a little alien gardening in there.
Yeah. Yes. So when you see that transit in front of the sun at the same rate that ours is, then you know that planet is in the Goldilocks zone. So we look at those stars for an entire year and see how many times it goes by. And if it's the same as us, then it equals maybe what an Earth-like possible planet.
That's one way that they do it, yeah.
And this telescope will be able to just do that much better, much further, and depending on who's using it. So, yeah.
James Webb is, he's opened up the can.
Tim's going to look in it and see Tim looking back at Tim.
From around the edge of the universe.
Yes.
See right into it.
There's actually a movie based on that idea. It's called Paycheck.
Yeah.
And it's really good.
Give that a watch as soon as I wrap my head around all this. I'm not even going to be able to sleep tonight, you guys. Thanks a lot.
He's just going to be staring at the sky.
Yeah.
So they've been powering, since it launched back in December, they've been running through getting it into its proper spot.
And then opening it up because it was all packed into a rocket. So you have this mirror that's 20 feet across. It's all packed up so it'll fit inside of a rocket. And it's not like we can send someone out there to, you know, stick in the crank and crank her open.
So it's all fully automated. Think of it like those tents that you shake and it just pops up like a pop-up tent.
But not that fast.
Not that fast and like a million times more complex. And all of the pieces have to pop up at just the right way or the whole thing just goes.
What was that, a $9 billion oops? But It didn't.
Everything worked.
Yeah.
All I'm thinking is what kind of power nerd came up with all this tech?
James and Webb. They were two people that had the initial idea of doing this. That's why it's named for them, yeah.
So it has now been fully unfurled. They are currently running.
It's been cooled.
It's cooled. So
it's the right temperature, and they've been doing calibration on the mirrors because that one isn't one big mirror. It's a whole bunch of little ones all together in a like a hexagon. It's like bees make, right? Sort of a honeycomb pattern. And they've adjusted all of those so that they point at the main sensor, which is the nose that sticks out. And they've got all those calibrated as of April 14th this year, 2022. That's all done. They're just... They finished up the cryocooling, which makes it really cold so it can do its proper thing. And they have just been doing some testing to make sure the last little bit of calibration is done. So science observations should begin in July. We have gotten some images back.
So if you look at this image here, Tim, we'll have this posted on our Patreon and stuff. That image on the left was from
Spitzer. It's a different space telescope.
Right.
The
one on the right is of the exact same image currently from
James Webb.
James Webb.
Without it being fully calibrated.
Wow.
One's got, and for the listeners here, one's got blurry little kind of sunspots.
One's very, very clear.
And one is, crystal clear. You can see the sparkle of the sun, the suns and stars.
Milky Way through the background.
They are very sparkly.
Yeah, and that's the difference from old telescope to what we're hoping to see from James Webb.
Old telescope sucks.
Anyone who's interested can go to NASA, and you can go to the James Webb website and see a lot of these pictures and the status of the James Webb and what it's doing and things like that.
Okay, you guys got to give me a couple minutes to just think about all this stuff. You probably see some smoke coming from my ears.
We'll give you a break, and then we'll come back with a little bit more. Not too much, but we've got a little bit more coming after the break.
Nerdish.
Nerdy.
Nerd news.
And we're back. So just a couple things that we're still kind of sticking about, that this whole infrared thing is compared to like a regular telescope. So what other kinds are there out there?
Well, we talked about the Arecibo one, that one in Mexico that was on James Bond.
James Bond, yeah, the cool James Bond.
They use radio waves for that one. So, right. So they were looking out there for stars. Now, we aren't talking about radio like Mix 103 or anything like that. We're talking about radio that like stars have been given off. Radio is still another type of light. It's just a different frequency that's way out there in the spectrum.
And people did buy time on that telescope. So certain researchers would get a grant to go down there from the University of Saskatchewan, and they'd go down there and they'd have 3 hours in the middle of the night for like
looking
six,
at a specific pulsar or something like that.
Yeah. And actually, funny enough, SETI was actually doing, so the search for extraterrestrial intelligence, SETI, they actually had bought time on that as well. So there were people who were looking for radio waves from aliens.
They were looking for the radio stations and TV and various communications.
But if you had the money, you could do whatever you wanted.
Yeah,
kind of the rule.
Yeah. So yeah. And there's other telescopes that are called radio telescopes. There's a few in the States, and I can't remember where it is exactly. If you've ever seen the movie Contact, you'll see it. She starts off at,
I think it's New Mexico.
Yeah, out in the middle of like this big empty space, and there's a whole bunch of
massive satellite dishes,
and that's called a radio telescope array. And what they're doing is, instead of making a bigger telescope, they're adding a whole bunch more to it over a big space to collect the radio and get even more images out of it. So that's another type. What else to wear there? There's infrared, ultraviolet. There's a special one that points at the sun. It's up in orbit somewhere. Out in the solar system, away from the Earth, that points at the sun, and it looks at ultraviolet, and it maps like sunspots and solar flares, and it looks at the corona, all the cool things on the sun. Because looking at it in infrared, all you'd see is just like a spotlight. Same thing with regular light. So,
but like none of these even compare to the James Webb.
No.
So what is like? I guess ultimate purpose is to kind of see. Back to the Big Bang, but what are some of the other implications to actually being able to see into and peer into the universe like this?
Knowledge. It all comes back to it's us nerds going
right.
We want to know more. We want to see more, and the only way we can do that is to get better toys.
why do you climb a mountain? Why do you binge watch an entire TV series?
That's more
Netflix.
Along my lines. I'm like, climb a mountain. You're trying to kill me?
I almost threw up in my mouth there thinking about it.
Because you can. And like Christian said, the thirst for knowledge, people want to, there are people out there that is just their driving force in their life. They're like, I want to know this. This is a question that I want answered. And I think by looking through the telescope and we look out at the universe at large, we can learn a lot more about our little tiny part of it here.
Oh, we see everything. It's like, we can literally see everything. The window is wide open. I'm just blown away.
Yeah. And as this comes more and more, we will share more stories on our socials and everything of what James Webb is sending back to us, what we've seen, what, you know, because they're still technically in the boot up process. They've calibrated everything.
So we haven't got any images yet.
The calibration and test images. So there aren't any full images that they've done yet, just the calibration. So yeah, they're pretty good. Like I showed you the image, they are amazing, but we don't yet know if that's going to be even more clear, if they can zoom in on that image. That's going to come.
The James Webb has a planned five-year mission, but because of how where it's placed and how it's working and everything, they expect up to 20 years.
So kind of like the little rovers on Mars that keep going and going and going.
I think it can.
It just better be a James Bond movie. Anyway, guys, you know what? Thanks for this again. Blown away.
We're going to... I know Jess's dad's got a telescope, and one of my buddies, he's got this... one of the guys we work with, he's got like a 150-pound telescope. And one night we'll...
Is it a 21-foot telescope?
No.
I won't be satisfied ever again.
but it can get you started, and actually it'll be good for our kids. So we'll bring our kids out one night. We'll go looking at some things and have it auto-track across the sky, and... You know, it'll be fun.
Who knows? Maybe we can get someone interested from the Regina Astronomical Society and get into their big telescope and talk to them and see through it.
Yeah.
Their big telescope. Ooh.
It's no James Webb.
No James Webb, is it? Yeah. Thanks again for letting us into your ear holes with this nerdish, nerdy nerd news podcast. Check out our website at wildshot.ca.
You can find us on all the socials under Nerdish, Nerdy, Nerd News. Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. You can also subscribe and support us at patreon.com/nerdish to get more bonus content, show notes, and merch.
If you'd like to send us topics for future episodes or comment about our existing ones, please email us info@wildshot.ca. And remember, stay nerdy.
Nerdish, nerdy, nerd news.